Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I am the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Sarah Reese-Tikonski. Sarah holds an MFA in poetry from Chatham University. Her first book, Come In, We're Open, which she wrote about growing up in her parents' diner, won the 2009 Stevens Poetry Manuscript Competition. Her chapbooks, including Snow Angels on the Living Room Floor and Marrying Maracuya, which won the Kathy Smith Bowers Chapbook Competition. Her poems have appeared in American Life and Poetry, Slipstream, Labor Studies in the Working Class History of the Americas, Cordelia Magazine, Waterwheel Review, and many others. She is the co-founder of Poetry Midwives Editing Services and teaches with us creative writing, Keep St. Pete Lit. Sarah!
Hi, and yay, Keep St. Pete Lit. I'm so grateful.
Thank you for being, oh, I heard Teddy in the background. Oh, I'm so glad to talk to you. Thank you. You were one of the people we interviewed when we did Typewriter Talks during COVID. So I'm so glad to circle back with you.
Yes, thanks for inviting me back. I'm really happy to be here.
Tell us what you're working on right now.
Well, to be honest, I am writing a lot of poems about my mom. And my mom recently passed away just less than 2 months ago. So that's like all I can write right now is poems about her and a lot about how she visits me from beyond. You know, I feel her and I see her in different ways. And so I think there will be a whole book about that. And, you know, before that, I was writing a lot of poems about motherhood. And I had put together, and I am still working on a collection, a full length collection of motherhood poems. And I have about, maybe 70 pages. And so it's just crazy that after working on poems, being in that space of motherhood for so long, now I'm thinking of my own mother and in such a profound way, and her life and the way she passed and the way she visits me.
I love it. I love that you're able to put your grief into words.
Thank you. It's really helpful. And it's like, I don't know how else to process it. And so when my mom was sick in the hospital, I couldn't get the words down fast enough. And so I was leaving myself little voice memos on Facebook Messenger, which I'm now going back to. And writing them in a journal and trying to make sense of all of it. And there are a lot of, you know, poem seeds there I can see.
Well, your mother wasn't sick. It was like within a week. It was very fast.
Yeah, it was really, really sudden. It was, you know, she had a stroke. Like one Wednesday she was here. She came every Wednesday. And, you know, the next Wednesday she was in the hospital. And so, you know, it was really fast, and writing is helping me a lot. So I'm grateful that I have that outlet, because I don't know how I would handle all of these big emotions without, just the page, the, you know, the comfort of being able to place those emotions somewhere and make sense of the words in some way.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, the hope for all of us, I mean, I can only speak for myself, is that somebody would read your writing and it could heal them too and help them feel not so alone, because grief is such a lonely process.
Yeah. And That's my hope too. And I think, you know, it's crazy because right before my mom, the day before my mom had the stroke, I had just finished reading Obit by Victoria Chang. She read it at the Dalai recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she has a book about the deaths of her mom, her mother and father. And so I had just finished reading that book and I sent it to my best friend whose father passed about a year ago. And I thought, okay, she needs that book. I wanted to read it before I sent it to her. And I even had Victoria Chang sign it to my best friend, you know, I put it in the mail and that night my mom had the stroke and it's like, I was reading that book and I didn't realize that I needed that too. And then the other book that I bought of Victoria Chang's was The Trees Witness Everything. And, you know, I love trees. So that's why I selected that book. I had no idea that there would be so many poems about just her mother's death, like yeah. in particular. And so it's like those books came into my life. And the other one I'll mention, because this is kind of just amazing how these books came into my life at the right time, but Time is a Mother by Ocean Vuong. Yeah. I happened to buy that book maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks before the stroke. And so, and there is a poem in that book that's titled Dear Sarah. And I might as well share this now since I was telling you about signs and everything and how I feel like my mom visits me. Well, yeah. I was sitting on the couch and I saw a blue jay like fly across the window in the kitchen. So quite far from me, but I saw a blue jay fly across the window. And then I just like broke down into tears. And I was like, Mom, if that is you, because I had been seeing a lot of birds and blue jays and cardinals in particular. But I was like, if that's you, I need signs that are in my face, Mom, because I was like missing her so much. Yeah. I was like, I need signs right in front of me. And then I turned the page to get to the next poem and it's Dear Sarah and spelled the same way as my name.
Oh, I love life when it shows up like
that. Yeah, so poetry has been everything right now. I mean, it always has been, but and it's been even like more important for me these days. And so, yeah, that's what, that's what I'm...
I bought a book like right before your mom that I'm going to bring to you because aww. My father, it's been a year. He's been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. He's still with us, but I've already started writing poems about the process and which you've read some of them, Sarah. And I got this book and it's called The Light of the World by it's a memoir by Elizabeth Alexander. And I'm going to bring it to you. And I bought it like a week before this happened with your mom. And I just haven't seen you to been able to give it to you. And it's about her husband. And she had to write about, it was very sudden. And she had to write about it just to be able to like process like what Joan Didion did with the Year of Magical Thinking when her husband John Glenn died. Like right. as creatives, I think that it's kind of the only way that we're able to move through it is through the words. And thank God we have that.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for the book that you're bringing.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that we are having this conversation because I'm going to see you later. Yes. And I'm going to bring the book to you. And then also, and anyone else who's listening, we've mentioned several books that if you are grieving, unfortunately, it's one of the things that is a part of life. And especially as we get older, our parents get older. Some of those of us that have been fortunate to have parents that live, I have friends that have lost their parents when they were very young. So,
yeah.
But you know, you're definitely always in my heart. I know it's knocking on the door for me. I mean, you never know. My father might live forever, but, you know, I am a rationalist too. So I'm sure I'm going to write my way through this process. I already started with him. So you've kind of talked about, how your writing process works, but what's a typical day look like for you as a writer? Cause you do have a small child.
Yeah. So thankfully Well, so in the mornings, I just go to a lot of playgrounds and that sort of thing with Teddy, and I do a lot of play dates. But then thankfully, he's a great napper. And so while he's napping, I work on writing, and I also work on like editing and like teaching prep or things like that. And he takes a pretty substantial nap. So I usually have at least like 2 to 3 hours. And so that is really helpful. And then like at night, I will work on writing more a lot of the time. And even like if he's playing, sometimes I'll just have like my computer nearby or something. But yeah, I squeeze it in when I can, you know. Poems work really well for me because they tend to be shorter. So I try to get, you know, I usually have like a new poem every couple of weeks. You know, sometimes there's more, sometimes they arrive faster, and you know, sometimes it takes longer. But anyway, I'm just grateful for just to be in the flow. I feel like there's been a lot of poem material for years now. And so I'm just... Yeah, that's what I do. I'm a mom, and I'm a writer and an editor, so, and a teacher. So I just balance all of those, and I love the nature of my work because I can do all of those things in chunks, like smaller chunks. You know?
Yeah. We have to do that sometimes. We have a lot of tabs open, especially as women and mothers.
Yes.
Raising children. And then if you're lucky, like I am, your child is actually an artist as well. So I'm finding now that my child is 17 and moving into his senior year, like so many things that I did in many ways for necessity, actually really suit who he is as a human. And I don't know if it's nature or nurture, but nature or nurture, but it might just be that I think, we're paired for the parents that we're supposed to have. Of course, some of us would possibly disagree if they come from really, really tragic and rough childhoods. But I was talking about my parents, and they're both such rebellious, free spirits. I mean, they're still like angry at the government and reading the paper every day and clipping things out and hanging them up and saving newspaper articles for everyone and watching current movies and... and they're both like in their, my dad's in his late 70s and my mom's in her mid 70s. And, you know, now that I've done a lot of healing work from my childhood, I'm like, I can't imagine that if I had different parents, I would be a different person, you know? So that's one of the blessings of being a creative, and you might be raising a creative child. I wouldn't be surprised.
I hope so. I think so. You know, he really loves music these days, and you know, Tad, my husband, plays trumpet, and every time Tad has his trumpet, Teddy like wants to play, and he's quite good at making the trumpet sound. That's hard for me to do. Yeah. You have to have a lot of lip strength to make it sound properly, you know.
So how has your writing changed over the years?
Wow, that's a good question. I would say like my writing or my process or both?
Well, both maybe. Why not?
Okay. I'll say that with my writing, I think that I used to be a little more, write a little more abstractly, like with abstract images, and I became more clear with what I was trying to say, because readers would sometimes just not know what they were supposed to take away from the poem. So I worked hard to be more articulate in that way and communicate with what I wanted to communicate. But then, I guess like now that I've, you know, gotten a handle on how to do that, I do sometimes try to write poems that are more experimental you know, less narrative and have, you know, maybe more abstract lines and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I like to have a mix now. So I think that that's kind of how maybe my writing has changed. And as far as the process, I used to always write my poems in my journal. And then I would revise in my journal too. Yeah. And I'd have like all these scribbles and like arrows and that sort of thing. And now I might have a couple lines in a journal that I think, okay, like that is a poem or a start to a poem. And then I'll go to my computer much faster these days to create the poems because it's just much faster for me. I can be more productive that way. And I also really like the keyboard of the computer. Yeah. Is that what it's called? The keypad? Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I feel, you know, like I'm a poet musician creating the poem song. You know, I like how it feels to press the letters. It's just like that movement of my fingers. And mm-hmm. So I really like revising on a computer. It's much faster. I can copy and paste and that sort of thing. So yeah. And I mentioned earlier that when I don't have time now because of being just busy, really busy, right? Or if I have a lot to say, but I don't have a lot of time, I will leave myself messages on Messenger through like the voice, you know, memo that you can do. And so you can like message yourself on Facebook Messenger. And so that's what I do. I message myself and I leave little voice messages to myself and type stuff too, like little messages. And that will, and so then it's all there and then I can go back later and I don't lose anything that way because I can't get it to the page or the computer fast enough, you know. Yeah. And I know, Maureen, I know you've been doing a lot of writing that way too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. My the memoir, hybrid memoir poem poetry book was all written that way because I can't type fast enough as I think.
Yeah.
It would have hindered me. And then the critic would have come in too much with typing for me. But to actually like just voice to text it, or I guess it's voice dictated. I don't know the language for it. I just do it in my notes in my iPhone. And
nice. Yeah.
And yeah. Your editing service, Poetry Midwives, woo woo. you're going through my writing now and helping me edit and getting it out into journals. And thank you for that. Is that,
A
whole different part of your brain doing that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, really creative though, you know, like with the suggestions, it's like revision. I love revising so much. It's like, it's my favorite part of the process because sometimes getting the bones down to the story, I feel like it's sometimes that's the hardest part because I, you know, like need the pieces or something or, you know, but then once the story is kind of down or it's like laid out in a way that feels like that's a very rough sort of skeleton of a poem, you know, love like what comes after just reading out loud and like thinking of better word choices and cutting the clutter. Cause you know, I think these poetry is more concise, you know, by nature. And so that's my favorite part of the poetry, you know, writing. And so I love giving suggestions for other poets to, you know, help them kind of polish and revise their work.
Yeah, I've been thinking about what's my favorite part besides the actual act of writing. And I think it's getting the poem where you like read it out loud and there's like a musicality to it.
Yeah.
And when the poem's done, you get like the goosebumps. Like that's the part that I really like. If you can tweak the poem enough and revise it and edit it enough that it flows. And I've had several people who've read my work go, you have a musicality to your writing. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't conscious. It was just like the way that it kind of resonated out loud in my body. And, you know, sometimes a word, that's why I think it's really important to read the poetry out loud personally, is because if a word that doesn't hit right, well, you'll know it. Like it's like out of
tune. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I always love the musicality aspect of poetry, and yeah, I always love that about your poetry, Maureen. And yeah, I always listen for what you said, like that clunky word, that awkward line that doesn't flow. And I think, you know, the more you read out loud, you hear it, the faster you'll hear it.
So what would you tell your younger writer self?
Oh, I would tell my younger writer self to just get rid of the inner critic and not worry about if it's good or not. Just write and not worry so much, because if it comes from the heart, it's always going to be good, you know, and you're going to help other people that way, you know, by just writing your truth, and other people will hear it, feel less alone, and that sort of thing. So just not to worry about it being good, because I think we can stop our flow. And I think we can, just a lot of poems never become poems, never grow into full grown poems, because they're not given the chance, because a writer doubted themselves and put down the pen or the typewriter or the computer or whatever, you know.
And you work with young kids. Do you see them coming to the page with like the critic there saying, I'm not a good writer, or
that's a good question, because I feel like elementary age kids don't have that inner critic yet. And so they just want to write, they want to share, they're more excited about it, at least in my experiences with the younger writers. But when I worked with older writers, like maybe more middle school, and I noticed more of like self-conscious, like feeling like them being self-conscious, like we're, you know, like not feeling like they know how to write and that sort of thing.
Interesting. So there's something that happens in many ways during middle school.
I think so. I think when we're kids, like I remember when I was a kid, like I just wanted to share and somebody to say they liked what I did, you know, like that felt good and it felt natural, right? To create and to share. And I think that, yeah, something happens sometimes where people get, they close that door. And question themselves. I think we kind of learn by society to question ourselves, to not be so sure of who we are.
Yeah.
And then and then we have to hope that we find ourselves again and just nurture that.
You know, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, I was done. Yeah.
I like that you said that you focused on, you know, you started out as a poet and it was more like, I don't know what the word you used, but it wasn't abstract. And then you went and you were trying to be more concrete and grounded with your poetry. And I like that you're kind of going back to the abstract now. And it's a kind of a really good way to like kind of keep yourself open and keep yourself curious and not getting so stuck in one mode of writing.
Yes.
Someone yeah. Said, it's like, do you always have to end your poem on a happy note? And I'm like, well, yeah. Like, come on. Well, what if you didn't? And I was like, well, God, that would be horrible. Why would somebody want to read something that's not on a happy note? Like, you know, it doesn't always have to end on a happy note.
Right. Yeah.
And I always like that.
Yeah. I think it's great to just to expand in that way and surprise yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So what would you say, one more question, maybe I have two. What would you say some of your major themes?
I would say I write a lot about like longing for something and then also connection too, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. And, and just like the beauty in the ordinary and the small things, that's a common theme too. I mean, I wrote a whole book about the diner, just that, kind of like, you know, just, what some people might think of as more of an ordinary part of life, like going to the diner, right? But just the musicality of the silverware clinks and the hiss of the coffee pot and how the diner is like a concert and mm-hmm. the spatula scrapes and everything like that. And so that comes into my, that theme comes into my poems in different contexts. Like, you know, even when I'm mothering, you know, like I write a lot about just, you know, like the small observations of life that are, seem important to me, you know, just those like little moments that we share that, like aren't they, maybe they seem like they're small, but there's like something deeper behind them. There's some deeper meaning, you know? And so I try to see like the ordinary parts of life and find the deeper meaning.
Yeah, because we all give life meaning, like the narrative and story we place on life, that's what we see and experience. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about poetry and about literature in general, how it can help mm-hmm. look at life differently and even create a new story from yourself. Some people have read books and it changed their whole life and it changed the whole trajectory of their life.
Yeah.
Several books like that just really like were like kind of crossroads for me that I still like refer to in different time periods of my life and go back to and go. And Anne Mara Lindberg's book, The Gift from the Sea, is one of them that yeah. Because it talks about different phases of the life of a woman. And I'm so grateful to those people that actually take the time and the solitary life of being a writer, but I can't think of better life. So the last question would be, what would be your like elevator pitch or lightning strike of advice for other writers?
Just trust yourself and yeah. be you, you know, that's it. Just be you and trust yourself and let the words come out the way they want to.
I love it. So let's hear some of your work.
Okay. Yeah, I've got two, poems like, so I'll read one that is actually going to be published in the Connecticut River Review. And I just found out a couple weeks ago, and it's called What the Birds Know. And it takes place in Villa de Leyva, Colombia. And that's where we spent a month in last year, my family, Mom, Tad, Teddy, and I last October. And this poem is from that experience in Villa de Leyva, Colombia. It's called What the Birds Know. One day when you sit and your feet touch the floor, pressing it with your history of steps, I'll show you the photograph of you from the night we kept you out way too late. You're in the Ruana that Daddy brought home from the market, holding your yellow truck, truckery, you call it. And who am I to correct you when my gringa tongue stumbles on rolling R's? And I repeat and repeat, but still can't say certain words. For a thick dictionary of time, we just stood on that damp dirt road and watched the pigeons roost in the eaves of Iglesia del Carmen, the church built in 1850, and the silence shuffled their feathers, our faces glowing in the sconces' yellow lights, bodies bundled in bird language, so that we did not move nor speak, just raised our chins to see la evidencia of magic or mystery the thing that no one really has the words for, what the birds know.
Lovely.
Thank you. And I'll just stop. This one is actually the last poem that I wrote about Teddy. And of course, I'll keep writing about Teddy. It's just,
oh, yeah. My child is forever me. Forever.
Right. Like, I tend to kind of stick with, a theme. Like, I did, wrote the diner poems, and then I did a lot of motherhood poems. And then I wrote a lot of, poems about living in Colombia, because we lived there for almost 4 years. And so anyway, this one is the last one I wrote before I started writing so many of about my mom, you know. So this one's called Rewind, and it's about Teddy growing older. You'll see. Okay, Rewind. The days are not equal mixing bowls of time. A moment can be a slow stir through the country, or a dash to another country. Map melted in mouth, new set of keys jingling in your pocket. A glance can be a year or a walk down the stairs, like how my closer to 3 than 4-year-old came down post-nap so casually said, "Hi, Mommy." He used to call my name when he woke, and I'd rub his back until he was ready to be lifted from the crib to rejoin the world. We'd rock back and forth, then peek through the blinds at the house being built next door. I'd hum him a song I used to listen to when I was small, incessantly pressing rewind on my CD player to jot down every lyric of my favorite songs on silver moons. But today is a stone skipped into many tomorrows, and my son got older in one sleep. He came down so casually, said, "Hi, Mommy," as though about to grab cereal and pour himself a bowl. Came down so casually as though swinging a backpack over his sturdy shoulder to catch the bus. Came down so casually as though about to fix his coffee and locate his briefcase. Came down so casually as though I am on the sofa of his house, and he's about to ask me if I've remembered to take my medicine. My son came down so casually, and there's not one unscratched way to rewind.
Boy, that hits home.
Thank you.
Lovely. Sarah, thank you so much for everything you do, not only as a writer and a friend, but for Keep St. Pete Lit.
Thank you, you too, for everything. And I'm so grateful for you and Keep St. Pete Lit and everything you do for this wonderful, awesome St. Pete. So thank you.
So thank you, everyone, for tuning into Typewriter Talks. If you want to learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit, you can go to keepstpetelit.org. And if you like what you hear, please consider donating to help to keep this programming going. And we will be back next week with another writer. And we hope that you read and write on. Thank you.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDole, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.